Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
What's going on, man?
I'm playing video games, dude. I needed a side hustle. So I'm hard at work, man. I'm in the metaverse, the sandbox, the Web3, the Xbox, the Nintendo, the Switch, IBM PC Junior.
I got some Pokeballs I can sell you.
Game Boy. Yeah. I've got them all running right now because, you know, I heard that you could play to earn and there's a whole economy forming around that. Is that
true? There is. There is. You want to buy some of my Pokeballs?
No. My rule of thumb is anytime you offer to sell me anything with the word balls in it, I should say no. On a better note, Matt, one thing that I will buy into is the fact that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Canva, where you go to collaborate and create amazing graphic designs for free, whether it's a presentation to share, an idea, a video to launch your business, or a social post to start a conversation with Canva. You can design anything. Discover the magic of visual communication and how Canva helps you create a lasting impact today. Visit canva.com to learn more. Look, there's a link for that in the show notes. There's also links to the other episodes in our series about NFTs, for which Canva was kind enough to sponsor the whole thing after I sent them a proposal for doing so with a proposal and presentation I created on Canva. Yeah. So anyway.
You're still the best graphic designer I know because of Canva.
I'm not going to disagree. And at the same time, I'm sorry to hear that. Anyway, so Matt, tell me about play to earn. What is all this stuff?
Well, I mean, we all play video games, right? And in certain games, you know, you got to level up your troops and do this and do that and whatever. And a lot of games these days, they want you to buy gems or buy whatever the things are, right? And the key is, in some of these games, there's people that can play and basically make the gems or whatever the things are and then sell them to the other people that are willing to pay for the gems, right? Just like with Pokemon. I know, like, was it your son that really likes Pokemon?
Still does.
And you occasionally buy Pokeballs, right, for him, right? So. Yeah. If I could convince my kids to play it all the time and just make the Pokeballs and, like, find Pokeballs, I don't know how the hell you do this in this game, but somehow or they find Pokeballs, and then they could sell them to you, then my kids could make some money because you want to buy the Pokeballs. So, you know, that's the way a lot of these games work, is people can play them and they earn all sorts of different things, widgets, gems, whatever the things are. And then sell them to other people who are willing to pay for them.
Okay.
You ever play any games like that?
You know, what's funny is I have a PlayStation 5 and have, you know, since it basically came out, I've probably played it for about 5 hours total. I'm not a gamer, man. I just don't do a whole lot of that. I don't, it's not really my jam. Like, now that I can get paid for it, probably still won't do it. Cause how much can you actually make doing this?
Well, so the biggest game out there in recent times has been Axie Infinity. And I want to say people could probably make, like, depending on how many hours a day you play, probably like $5, $10, maybe $20 a day, which does not
so a dollar an hour.
So that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but you and I both know in certain countries around the world, yeah, like a dollar an hour is like a minimum wage. It's like they could go get a job making a dollar an hour, or maybe they could play some kind of game and make 75 cents or $1.50 or whatever. And the whole key to these games is you're trying to, you know, get some advantage, right? People pay because they want a better character or whatever. And with Axie Infinity, they're like axes, which is very similar to Pokemon, by the way. So you probably know way more about this than I do, but they have, you know, different characteristics and different fighting capabilities and all this stuff, right? And so in Axie Infinity, you're always trying to get better characters, and the more you play the game, you can get better characters. And so then people will sell their characters, right? So then there's a whole marketplace where you can go and buy them. So basically, you can play and basically level up the characters and then sell them. But in Axie Infinity, there's also something called smooth love potions. So if you don't want to buy any of my balls, do you want to buy any of my love potions?
No.
All right. Well, I have some smooth love potions if you want to buy them. Those are required in Axie Infinity to, like, I don't know, level stuff up or whatever it is you do. But the most of this stuff is all on NFT related, right? So the SLP, which is those smooth love potions, you can basically buy and sell like crypto. They're like cryptocurrencies. And that's how people make money. They make these SLPs and then they're able to sell them for dollars or whatever currency you want. And then you got real money. So it is crazy. You've got, I think, like in the Philippines, there's like hundreds of thousands of people a day that play Axie Infinity and sell SLP and Axies and all this stuff. It's like its own like little mini economy. Have you ever talked to anybody who does this stuff?
No, I haven't. Now, well, yes, actually, because last week's episode in the series was, if you've been keeping up, it wasn't Matt and Matt. It was myself. And I had a guest that was the founder of the Earn FT.
Yeah.
Network. And so they have like that, they plug into like 16 different ways. It's everything. You can do everything. It's listening music. It's all user engagement related, you know, like, and so there were some gaming implications. So yeah, I have talked to someone about that. I haven't talked to anybody in the Philippines about it, but he did mention, cause you had said that to me before and I brought it up with him, and he said that, yeah. So in you talk about just like utilitarianism. So, all right. So if Spotify is $10 a month or $15 a month or whatever, that might not seem like a lot here. That might be a lot in other countries. So some of this stuff enables it. What it is it really just kind of ends up washing out the cost. So it's got this kind of like mutual benefit because it's driving usership in for some of these platforms where they might not have it. And, you know, one of the semi-dirty little secrets about SaaS and software products. So like, okay, so if you buy I won't say who, because I don't want to call them out. Maybe they'll be a sponsor on the show later. You buy subscription X for $60 a month in the US, that might only be like $20 in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And now they're going to want you to you have to have like a card address that's there in the Philippines. And then sometimes you don't. So maybe check that out if you want to buy something, but because they have to operate out in the pricing structure, which makes sense. So if you look at like some of these games, the music streaming services, I mean, they had a whole bunch. You go back to the episode, we listed all of them, and you know, you find a link in the show notes to that and learn more about it. So you mentioned Axie Infinity. They were in the news lately.
Yeah,
Yeah, I was going to mention that too. Let me finish my previous thought. I just looked it up. It says there's about 2.5 million people a day play Axie Infinity. Can you believe that? Worldwide. But they estimate about probably 40%, maybe as much as 50% of them are all in the Philippines. So, so those, like I said, I don't know how much money they all make. They make like $5, $10, $15 a day, something like that, which doesn't seem like a lot of money, but that could be equivalent to like almost a minimum wage job.
Or more, because if you separate like what we'll call skilled labor into not, you know, like the people that work at Full Scale. So Matt and I have 250 employees at Full Scale, fullscale.io. Now they're developers. These are like senior people that have been doing what they do for like 10 years. I don't think they'd be real entertained with $5.
But
on the flip side of that, in the city where our headquarters is at, the average wage for just general people, like talking like people that mow grass and are, you know, sweep floors and shit like that, they make like $400 a month. So
no, like half of that.
Yeah. So $5 to $10 a day can actually it's a full time job.
Yeah. So that's to me insane that there's that many people that play it, but the with all of these games, they all sort of, I mean, let's be honest, they're all sort of a little bit of a Ponzi scheme, right? Because it's like I have to, like in this game, like I have to buy axes so that I can play the game to get more stuff that then I can sell, like. And so somebody, like to play Axie Infinity, you first have to have enough money to buy these characters, which are NFTs, to then play the game. And then I guess in your hope, right, is then you make more of them and then sell them to the next person that wants to play the game. But all of a sudden, if nobody wants to play the game anymore, none of it's worth anything, right? So it's a little bit of a like a Ponzi scheme where it's like you've got to have a lot of people doing it and wanting to do it. Or otherwise, like the whole economy of it kind of will just shut down. Or you could have some people.
Well, so the biggest threat to those operating a Ponzi scheme, other than jail or death, is people making mass withdrawals. So you look at like Bernie Madoff, the problem they had there is because those things were representing the only thing they had that was profitable. When the housing crisis hit in 2008, they had tons, people wanted to take withdrawals. So other fund managers needed to take the quote gain that they had to make the losses not look so bad. And the money wasn't there. And that made it all collapse. Now I'm at the Axie Infinity homepage right now. And according to them, 3.6 billion US, I'm assuming that's US, traded in their in-house marketplace. And the most expensive Axie, is that the character I'm assuming?
Yeah, yeah, yep.
820 grand US.
That's insane, man. That's crazy. I mean, dude. So you mentioned this earlier, and I was going to break and bring this up. So the biggest problem with a lot of crypto-related stuff is all the hacks and scams that go on. And so... Yeah. I do a lot in the DeFi side, which is the decentralized finance. So I don't do as much with like NFTs, but I do a lot on the decentralized finance stuff, which is more like lending and like financial related stuff. Like you can take Bitcoin and then borrow US dollars against the Bitcoin as collateral. You can do all this stuff. It's all out there. It's kind of cool.
Can I borrow 820 grand to buy an Axie?
No, but I'll give you some ApeCoin.
I'll take that.
But, so there's a lot of trading of different cryptocurrencies that exist out there. And anyways, like you mentioned, Axie has their own, you know, marketplace for people that want to buy and sell Axies and all this stuff, right? And anyways, there was some kind of hack that happened within the last week or so. And we're recording this episode on the 1st of April. So it's like 3 days ago, 4 or 5 days ago, there was a hack that happened where somebody managed to get basically like the key, like the developer's key that's required to like sign transactions and interact with the marketplace, and then basically drain $600 million worth of Ethereum and dollars out of the marketplace, which is insane. I don't know how that has really impacted the game over the last few days since then. If, you know, if it just keeps on going and,
I mean, dude, if you had a big account of whatever that was and suddenly it turned into vapor, I would imagine you'd probably have a pretty detrimental effect to all of it.
Yeah. I mean, it probably didn't impact.
If you went to put your paycheck in the bank every 2 weeks and they're like 90% of the time, we're going to have your money.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go put it in the bank.
Yeah, so I don't know how that impacted the marketplace, but it just goes to show the problem with some, you know, blockchain related stuff is these security exploits that can happen.
That's been with crypto in general, like even going all originally back to like Mt. Gox, which was originally a Pokemon trading platform that turned into the Verse kind of like exchange and almost like place, and like, dude, it got cleaned out.
Yeah. So, you know, there hasn't been as many of those types of like exchange hacks. You know, you have things like Binance and Coinbase and all these that are, you know, at least in recent times, those big exchanges have been pretty bulletproof and pretty safe. But yeah, you go back like several years ago. Yeah, there was like a lot of that shit going on with Mt. Gox and all these things, like huge hacks that happened. So,
yeah. And but, I mean, that's been going on a lot in crypto. Now, that said, it's probably a drop in the bucket compared to white collar crime and other forms of fraud and theft. Like we were just talking about Bernie Madoff. He stole way more money. He stole significantly more money than that. You know? So, I mean, this isn't just a crypto related thing, but okay. So, all right.
So I can
make a dollar an hour.
So we've been talking about Axie Infinity a lot, 'cause that's the biggest one out there at this point. But do you know what the first one was? The first like NFT crypto play to earn game was?
I do not.
It was CryptoKitties.
Ah.
And so CryptoKitties was actually the very first game, came out in 2017. And, you know, it was in many ways kind of way before its time, because just like today, everybody loves like these Bored Apes and all this stuff and their different avatars and JPEGs and whatever. I mean, the CryptoKitties were just, they were cute little pictures of cats, right? So if you go to CryptoKitties website, they're just cute cats. It's the same thing. They're just JPEGs. But CryptoKitties was the same thing. You know, you get a couple cats and then you breed them together and then you get a new cat and it has, you know, unique capability, you know, features and capabilities and whatever. Just like other NFTs, right? Like you have your grandpa apes and stuff and they have unique, you know, styles and you like his 3D glasses or whatever it is, right? So CryptoKitties are the same way. They have just unique attributes to them. But basically, you know, you can buy CryptoKitties and breed them together. And if you're really lucky, you'll get some super rare one or whatever, and then you can sell that. And then you have people with a lot of NFTs that are then trying to take these things and like create other games out of them, right? So CryptoKitties is more about like breeding them together, I believe. It's not like Axie Infinity, which is like a game where you like go and fight and do whatever you do. But I think, you know, CryptoKitties wants to, I think, I get to that point, is make more games and stuff based on the characters. But there's a lot of this kind of stuff going on. So I'm trying to create games right now, and I
looked up CryptoKitties, and most of the time when for NFTs, when you go to stuff like, okay, you look at, we'll use Bored Ape, the most for that, and CryptoPunks, those have like 10,000, right? They have 2 million on CryptoKitties, which have 114,000, almost 115,000 different users. And right here at the top of the list, I'm clicking one that is for sale for 10,000 ETH. It's $35 million.
That's insanity.
Can I get your wallet address so I can buy this?
Nope. Yeah. And so, it's not as rare.
Let's take a moment and reflect on the fucking insanity of that. Okay. So let me break this down for you. Okay. So in the world of banking, you will often hear high net worth individual, super high net worth individual, and then ultra high net worth. Okay. So the first one starts at 1 million, the next one's 10 million, and the next one's 30 million, of which literally like 0.1, like not even 0.1%. There's like how many people have a net worth of $30 million? But whoever let's see who owns this, because this is on the blockchain. It's at the CryptoKitties auction. You can make an offer on it. You don't have to go 35 million. I'm thinking 32 million. Let's go a little lower. I'm going to bid should I bid more than the buy it now price and just really?
He's got gold eyes though, man. That's super rare.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because that's actually a really good point. So that's one of the things that people find attractive. So like Eminem bought a Bored Ape in 2021 that really resembled him. It had similar to him. I bought all of my grandpa apes because I thought they looked like you.
Because you look like a grandpa.
Now here's the thing though. Those are the board apes are like $1 million or more in some of that. By the way, you know, we know someone that works at Full Scale whose buddy gave him a CryptoPunk when they were like $40 a piece. And they kind of like, I transferred you an NFT a while ago just so I could see how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like a joke. Now I was talking to my wife last night and reminded her that the very first Bitcoin transaction was like 10,000 Bitcoins for a pizza.
Yeah.
And that's like, at one point that would have been $69 million worth of Bitcoin based on the highest price it saw. Based on the one today, it's still 50 million, which you could buy this CryptoKitty and still have 15 million left. But I mean, but look at the math on this. So this transaction, if 2.5% of this stays at OpenSea, congratulations, OpenSea, my God. You know what I'm doing right now? I'm dragging this CryptoKitty over to my desktop. Oh. Yeah, now I've got it. Yo, it's a PNG. So, oh, great. It has a transparent background. So maybe I'll put him in with my apes on the ads that go with this. Now, you know, we're talking about the creation of images and stuff like that, which feels like a really good time to remind everyone that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Canva. With Canva, you can design your ideas with ease. You could use Canva and within moments, make an NFT and go and upload it somewhere like OpenSea. And I think that's pretty cool. And by the way, you can make really cool stuff with Canva, so it would look good. Probably better than this $35 million PNG file that I saw there. But, you know, they have 500,000 free templates. They have a rich content library. They can help your team achieve your goals. So you can sign up and start designing for free at canva.com. There's a link in the show notes. Now, Matt, I think sometimes you think about Canva as like me using that to be a designer and make images and stuff like that. But one of the hardest parts about making cool images is collaborating with your teams. And they have some really cool stuff in there. So you can have multiple people in there and
editing a file at once.
Look, if you've never had to be on a creative or marketing or something team, and the amount of time, effort, and energy you will spend, like just saying like, hey dude, this needs to be a little bigger font. Like having that in the built into the tool that you use is super helpful. Yeah. So I'm going to do so many things. Do not steal copyrighted images and turn them into other stuff. I felt like I needed to disclaim that. Okay. So, all right, let's have a discussion about this. So you talk about Axie Infinity and playing it. When I think about that, I always think of, you know, there's always someone gaming the system.
Yes.
Pun intended there.
Oh yeah.
Right. So it's late enough. I'll admit this. So like when I was a ticket broker, we had like dozens of iPods and phones and shit. We would just, because we could make individual purchases on them over and over and over and not just have one browser, you know, getting kicked out for having too many open or something like that. How do people game this stuff? Because I know people are. They have to be.
Yeah. So there are definitely, I don't know about Axie Infinity, but definitely some of these types of games, people are automating playing the games. And so honestly, that's how I learned to do computer programming back when I was in like
eighth grade. Tell that story, man.
You know, back then it was dial up. So I had a modem and I would dial up and
play. Give us a year, old man.
God. So this would have been like 1995, 1994. Yeah.
That's why you're getting a grandpa ape and not a bored one.
And back then when we had dial up, I would dial up and play text-based games, and they were like Dungeons and Dragons games, right? So, you know, I would want to level up my player, and I want the best sword, and I, you know, want the best armor and all that. And all day while I'm at school and while I'm sleeping, my character runs around in a circle, like killing skeletons and zombies or whatever, and picks up the gold that they drop and whatever. So then when I wake up in the morning, I've got more experience points and I've got more gold and whatever, right?
How did you do that? Do you just script it or just like?
Yeah, there was scripts that would like read the text that comes on the screen, right? So you could read the text that comes on the screen and then know like, oh, it found a monster. And then I put in A for attack or whatever until I kill it. And then I have to sit there and rest. And
do that 10,000 times.
Yeah. And then my character has to rest until I get all my hit points back, and then I can run around again until I find another monster and then kill that monster. But, you know, even back then, to take a little tangent for a second, I bought, like, at one point in time, I think I paid like $50 or $75, something like that, to buy some super rare sword or something from somebody else, like in the real world. Much like you would today with these NFTs, right? Like, just like people want to pay $75 for a super cool Axie from Axie Infinity or whatever, I paid $75 for a sword, right? And that was a long time ago. So, I mean, I can totally see today people doing this kind of stuff in games, and it makes sense to me. But you talk about, like, automating it. Yeah, as a computer programmer, right, if, like, Sandbox, we talked earlier about Sandbox, like the metaverse, that runs in the browser. You don't even have to install anything on your computer. You can actually run it in your web browser. So, you know, you're familiar with things like Selenium and all these browser toolkits and stuff like that do QA stuff. Like, potentially, maybe it's as simple as wiring up one of those things that says click here, press the up key, you know, up on the keyboard, run around in a circle or do whatever in some game, and you might be able to make money doing it. And yeah, there are no doubt people that make like little bots or like automated things that are gaming the system on some of these things. Maybe that's what I should be doing. Maybe I'm missing out on all of it.
So some of the first AI stuff that came out, the easiest way for the designers and the developers to put it in motion was to let it play games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the game would just stay on, and then they could do it at scale. So they could run 5,000 different versions of it, and the AI was doing stuff within it. So, I mean, and that's true, you know, because that was just an easy way to, if you go all the way, remember the movie War Games with Matthew Broderick? Yeah. So Whopper, that computer, was just like, you remember, because he was playing games with it. It was all just about training that thing to understand game theory and what happens when you, like, okay, so I've done this 5,000 times and it always resulted in game over. Don't do it next time. That's all AI and machine learning is. So I guarantee. By the way, did you watch the Super Pump series on Showtime at all?
No, not yet.
Okay. So, by the way, I highly recommend that. It's the story of Uber. So Uber had a massive problem when they tried to go into China, because right before they launched in China, Apple removed a specific device tag on the iPhone that made it very difficult to track meaning device specific. So they had these maps at Uber where they had literally looked like centipedes, and they would be like 50 cars in a row, but it was really just one car with 50 different, like, they were simulating rides in order to get the bonus things. And they were losing $25 million a week to that. So someone's always out there gaming these things and trying to, there's always a hustle that someone's going to figure out. So
I know what I'm doing this weekend. I didn't even think about that.
You're driving for Uber?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, you're going to build AI that plays video games?
Yeah, while I sleep. I should get back to that, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, and by the way that goes when you're an entrepreneur is once you figure that out and you're like, I can make a dollar an hour doing that, we probably better buy 15,000 computers.
Yeah. Let's scale.
We're going to end up like purchasing like the building next door to the full scale building.
And it'll have a room full of Raspberry Pis.
The deafening sound of 10,000 computer fans on at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, and no doubt there are people doing that to these play-to-earn games, absolutely. Or paying people to play the game, or like all sorts of crazy stuff, I guarantee, that goes on.
Yeah, I'm going to put my kids to work.
Yeah, heck yeah, put them to work.
Yeah, and I'm going to buy you a Grandpa Ape with the proceeds. So, okay, so, is this... something that, so you have the top NFT games, Axie Infinity, you got the Sandbox, Gods Unchained, DeFi Kingdom, Splinterlands. I love how they all have their tokens. It's Axe, Sand, Land, Gods, Jewel, Wax.
I messed around with DeFi Kingdom one day. I played that once.
So is this something that still like has like massive growth potential? Are we in the infancy? Are we, you know, like, I mean, where do you think we're at with this as a world?
What's interesting is, you know, today you can play like these super high tech, like immersive graphics, you know, games like the latest Call of Duty or like, you know, that have just like most realistic, like super cool, like graphics and all this stuff. Right. But people also love like retro games and stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times these games, they're not cutting edge graphics. Some of them are pretty lame, but they're definitely kind of more retro feeling kind of games. And even some of the metaverse stuff, like you go into like the sandbox or some of those like metaverse things, and the graphics are not super exciting. They're not super impressive.
Kind of like the Snoop Dogg doggies that don't look like Snoop Dogg.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You saw those. Yeah, they're not super impressive.
Well, I was going to buy you one and then I didn't.
But that partly makes
I can't afford the gas fees.
But the good news is that makes like creating these games like a lot easier because the graphics are not like super crazy.
True. Well, another thing too, you were mentioning countries like the Philippines, you can't be bandwidth intensive with a lot of those countries because, you know, like, so Philippines is we'll call that more of second world infrastructure for the most part. And it's the second world because there's spots of it where are more modern than where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
And then some of it's not even close, but you know, a lot of people still have over the air internet, you know, like literally like mobile hotspots kind of stuff. And
well, I own a house there and I think our internet's 3 megabits. Like we're not on super high fast broadband, even at my house there. So,
well, and so that's one of the things that, like Elon's trying to solve with Starlink.
Yeah.
And so we've launched 3,000 satellites into space so the world can make a living playing CryptoKitties.
maybe it's crazy.
So
it's crazy.
So question, and I'm positive I know the answer to this. So with CryptoKitties, they're obviously their monetization model is shaving off fees that are associated with these transactions then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the game's free to play for the most part, but if you're going to buy a $75 this, then they're going to keep $7.50 or $15 or something like that. So, you know, that's something that a lot of people don't consider. You know, I had a meeting once at the old Full Scale office with someone that wanted to build an app, and I got halfway through the meeting and I realized that this young entrepreneur who had a lot of spirit, but didn't realize that Apple keeps 30% of in-app purchases. Yeah. And his margin was 15%. So like I saw that and I had stopped and I was like, hey, you realize that with this current model, you would lose 15% on every sale. And he's like, what do you mean? Right. So, but the thing is that's how, so the App Store, and that was a big fight they got into because finally Apple made the concession of moving that down to 15% for like SaaS type recurring subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
But think that's why Apple's prints money. Like that's the Axie Infinity model times half of mobile devices.
Well, and that's why they're fighting with like Epic and Fortnite and all that. Like they sued them because they're taking the 30%, which doesn't make any sense, right? Because if I go buy something on Instacart or Amazon on an Apple device, they're not taking 30%, but they do if you all of a sudden buy $10 worth of V-Bucks on Fortnite. Like it's weird.
But I think that there's a, I don't think your app for those things is actually tendered through it's different. It's a little different because, you know, do you have the Audible app like books on tape? Okay. So you can't purchase credits that you have to go like, the Audible, like, so you go have to like Amazon.com, not the Amazon app. But I hear what you're saying with the actual Amazon app, because I guess you do get that through the app.
Well, that's what Apple fights, right? Apple's trying to prevent. Also, they have rules that says you have to pay through the Apple Store. You can't pay outside of it. And that's what Epic was fighting them on, actually, is you could pay outside of the Apple Store.
How does Amazon get around that?
Because they're not selling digital goods. I think it's all a digital goods thing. I think that's what it is. But anyways, we digress. But
well, Gigabook has a Apple app. But the thing is we don't have a sign up. You can't subscribe through the app, which by the way is a shitty approach because it doesn't. It would let them have their 30%, right? Because if they're the reason that it is what it is. Raise your prices if it doesn't fit your model. Because the easier you make it to subscribe. So that was an issue I had with so many things. Like, so I'm an Apple guy and I have Apple TV and we use that to power our TVs. But, you know, like when I'm a History Channel buff and I never subscribed to it because I had to like go somewhere else to subscribe and then come back and sign in. And they've fixed that a lot now. And, you know, it is what it is. I don't know if that was just stubbornness or lack of the app providers creating something. I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
So on all these new play to earn games, I think are really interesting, and they're kind of piggyback on another trend with games where games are free. Like Fortnite is free, right? And it's one of the most popular games there is. So instead of paying $60 for a video game, like Call of Duty or whatever, I'm paying nothing for Fortnite, but then they make an insane amount of money on people buying skins and dances, you know, V-Bucks and all this stuff, right? Like there's an economy.
Love potions.
But what you're seeing in these play to earn games is the marry of that same strategy where you've got a lot of people that can basically play the game for free. And then you got people that are playing the game that earn some things that then they can sell. And then you have another group that will buy that stuff, right? And so that just creates more and more hype and demand of the game. You've got the people that are getting paid to basically play the game, and then they're selling stuff to other people. And it makes sense. It creates like its own weird little economy in all of it, right? And then somebody like Axie Infinity is, as you mentioned earlier, I don't know if they're taking 1% or whatever they're taking when people are buying and selling these things to each other, but they create like their own little economy. It's really fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing though, is one thing that we didn't talk about is remember the digital world is all in competition for your eyeballs.
Yeah.
So there's a huge amount of value. And we're going to talk about that in a later series about the whole, about NFT property. Right. And, you know, like what people are doing with that, you know, and what does that mean? Now you hear that, oh, so-and-so spent $1 million on a lot on Main Street on Decentraland. Well, why can people justify that? And because it's, you know, I mentioned the Super Pumped, the Uber documentary. There's a WeWork one on Apple Plus right now, and they said something in it. Because what a brilliant strategy Adam Neumann had early, because he knew he needed big investors. So the second WeWork was right across the street from who's Jamie Dimon with? Whatever that is. Is it JP Morgan?
Not sure.
Someone huge, but they opened it. So he was like, it's not, and here's the thing, it was a shorter building, so it didn't have great views. And they said, it's not what you can see, it's who can see you. So that's where that justification comes in the competition for eyeballs. So that's where, like, when you hear about, so do you know that TikTok got more visits than Google last year? Like more usage?
What?
Yeah, wow. Man, worldwide, like what the fuck?
Wow. Right.
So, but here's the thing though. So that's a threat to Google because then they're selling ads and clicking stuff like that. So, you know, Facebook's and Instagram and Reels are competing with that. And it's all about getting your eyeballs in. So the same thing goes. So when I would imagine when you look at the key performance indicators at something like Axie Infinity, they're like, how many people sign in? How many daily users do we have and how long do they stay in?
Yep.
How much do they buy and sell and whatever? I don't know.
Yep. Man.
So this, some of this stuff, it does honestly kind of blow my mind.
Well, the future of this is so the NFT side of this, you have like the NFT characters like Axie Infinity or CryptoKitties or whatever, you know, you have the NFT of the character. And then in some of them, they also have their tokens, like you mentioned, that are more like crypto tokens or kind of like a currency. So when you play the game, you can earn an NFT or you can earn the different currencies and sell them and whatever and trade them. And the future of this, in regards to NFTs, essentially being able to take those NFTs into like multiple different games and stuff, right? It's like, oh, I have my Axie. Can I breed my Axie with a Crypto Kitty? Or maybe I play some game where the Crypto Kitties fight against the Axies within Decentraland or Sandbox. Like, you know, that's the ultimate goal with some of this, is trying to figure out like this cross compatibility between different things. But
and that's smart. I hadn't even really considered that, how they merge, and they have to eventually.
Well, they could, right? They'd have to be on the same blockchain, and a lot of these games are on different blockchains, like DeFi Kingdoms you mentioned earlier. That's on Harmony, and you know, some of them are on different blockchains too. But if they're all on the same blockchain and they wanted to work together, the games have to, you know, you have to program, like as a programmer, I'd have to look, you know, for NFTs with a certain contract that are axes or whatever, right? Like I have to write my code to look for those specifically and then enable them in my game to do something different. But potentially, I think you could, anybody could just make a game. Like I'm going to make a game that uses Axie characters, even though Axie Infinity didn't have anything to do with it. Like I'm just going to make a game and you can bring your Axies and come play over here. That'd be interesting to do. And we'll see if stuff like that happens in the future, but that's part of the value of them making NFTs.
I have an interesting stat about how many NFT projects flop, and it's going to surprise you and maybe not, but before I give you that number, as we begin to end this show, and thanks again for another great series about NFTs. I've learned so much, and hopefully those of you listening have. If you want to learn more about how to do better graphic design and work as a team, I want to just once again give a big thank you to today's episode sponsor and the series sponsor, Canva. With Canva, you can work together. You can do it from wherever you want. You can get on the same page with your team. Seamless real-time collaboration. Dude, so easy. So easy. It's like I make really cool stuff with Canva. Just try it out. And by the way, man, like the thing I love about it is it's really like a drag and drop kind of world. They have taken all of the hard stuff out. All the things like, dude, I hate Photoshop. I'm not going to lie. I hate it. It's too complex. I don't need all that shit. Like it's overkill for me. And it's really expensive to buy and subscribe to. Like Canva's free on many levels. And I actually went ahead and I used the paid account. And yeah, it's good stuff. So check this out. I 1 in 3 NFT projects at the moment, at the point of the article that I just read, is literally like dead. Like it doesn't get any play. It doesn't do anything. It basically flops. 1 in 3. Now here's the thing. That number is going to skyrocket because right now there is an oversaturation. I'm seeing it occur. There's flooding of the market. Everyone's launching an NFT, and just know that if you're listening, like I don't like the whole buying NFTs on speculation. I mean, I think that's risky as hell.
That's what it all is though, right? I mean, it's like 100% speculation. Yeah. At least with the NFT games, it's like, okay, I can go buy an Axie Infinity and I can play it this weekend and I can sell them. And maybe I got some smooth love potions and I can sell those to you because you want to buy my love potions. You can make a few bucks at it and sell, where you're not buying like just NFT art that's truly just like JPEGs or whatever, right? Like these kind of NFTs in the games at least have some form of utility within the games themselves and the ecosystem. So as long as the games are popular, kind of earlier why I said it's kind of a little bit like a Ponzi, as long as the games are popular and people want to play the games, they'll have some value. But yeah, if like 100,000 people that play Axie Infinity all wanted to sell their Axies tomorrow, yeah, the price of them is gonna cave. So but yeah, okay, as long as people want to do it.
All right, well, I mean, yeah, and hey, here's the thing. People are like, how does this have value? Value exists wherever we create it. You know,
people like to play games.
If there's a market, if there are multiple buyers interested in buying a fucking JPEG of an ape, because it's exclusive and it's, you're like, how, there's no way that's worth $1 million. If it just sold from me to you for $1 million, it is very much worth $1 million somewhere, somehow, and whatever. So, I mean, some of this is going to continue to, I think the early stuff has a chance. I really think it's clever what Bored Ape did. They acquired, so first off, they went out and got traditional venture back funding. They realized they had created a store of wealth. They brought in a ton of money. They went and acquired CryptoPunks. So they had the other kind of original, like popular thing. And then they used that to basically stake and create their own cryptocurrency, ApeCoin.
Yeah.
I mean, can we respect the hustle on that? Because at some point
they're going to create a game.
Yeah, bro, but they haven't even done it yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Let's go back, and this was like, dude, a year and a half ago, you could buy a Bored Ape for like a couple hundred bucks, man. So yeah. First off, congratulations to the people that actually got that and bought it and did well with it. And then congratulations to the group of entrepreneurs that sat down and said, dude, let's randomly generate a whole bunch of pictures of apes that look bored. Well, what are we going to do, Matt? I don't know. Let's put a cigarette in some of their mouths and make some of their eyes red. And we'll make 10,000 of them. We'll put them on the blockchain and see what happens. And everyone they knew was like, dude, you're never going to sell JPEGs for a lot of money. Wrong.
Hold my beer. Watch this.
I know, man. Yeah, dude. You sold a company once for $150 million, and how long did it take from when you started that company to when you sold it? It was like 10-year turnaround, right?
8 years. I should have just bought Bored Apes.
Right. And then how long from when you founded Stackify till that exited?
It's like another 10 years.
Right. So yeah. And the $1 million bedroom sequence was 8 years at that company. Full scale, it's taken us 4 years to get to 250 employees. We've been doing it wrong the whole time, man. We could have just been literally using a generator to create pictures of monkeys. And that whole thing is worth $5 to $10 billion right now, man.
Oh, I think I'm going to focus this weekend on building a bot to play these games for me.
Dude, no doubt. I might be in on that. I have another good idea for some entrepreneurship. I think that we blazed right over that. And so I'm going to go ahead and end this episode so I can talk to you about it, Matt. I'll see you next week.
See ya.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.